Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And we're getting through the month of May. Hey, Mother's Day's coming up.
It is. Is that exciting?
Is that this next Sunday or the Sunday after? So next Sunday?
No, this Sunday coming up. Yeah, May, okay. whatever it is. I had some exciting news this week.
Yes, what happened?
My son graduated from college.
I thought he graduated on the last show.
He graduated twice. No, he graduated. Oh. I was going to his graduation.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
So it was pretty cool.
So did he get through it? Did he grab the, when they gave him the diploma, did he not choke and drop it?
No, they don't give him diplomas anymore. They just give you, first of all, you got to put your name on a piece of paper as you walk up with the phonetic spelling of your name.
Oh, brother.
That's how they say it.
Do you have to put your pronoun on there too?
Like the Mr.?
Mr., Ms.
No, they just say your name. And then
Faye.
Jeb Bush was the speaker.
Jeb Bush?
Yeah.
That must have been exciting.
Not really.
I wouldn't think so.
No. He had some nice things to say. You know, he's a Florida fan, of course, and it was a very basic. There was nothing to it. It was nice though. It was very nice, and there was 3 days of graduation for this school. Of
how many people do they graduate?
And each day had two different batches. Yeah. So they must have, I mean, the school has 60,000 total at UCF.
What?
Yeah, I think the 60,000. That probably counts some of the part-timers as well as the onliners. So maybe there's 50,000?
That's a lot.
Yeah. So how many graduated? So maybe 8,000?
No wonder they have a good football team. They have a lot of people to choose from.
Well, UCF only had a good football team this year. Otherwise, they were awful. Last year, they went 0-18. Oh, in 15.
Oh.
It was
well, they had that coach, and I think somebody already hired him away.
Yeah, they did. So this year was when they had that really good, let's see what's going on here.
It just tells you that the coach is a lot more important than people like to want to believe.
Yeah, I mean, the first year that he did well, they just took him away.
Yeah.
So, kind of sucks. Anyway, let's kind of go through a few things. I had a couple other things to talk about in the beginning here. Oh, yeah, let me just mention in the front that I need some help from the listeners. I'm looking for a specific bottle of bourbon. Seriously. I'm looking for Weller 12-year-old Weller. Actually, I had that for the
Did
first.
Did you have ever try the 18?
I don't know if they had an 18 Weller.
Oh, yeah.
But Weller, we can't get it. It's the same distillery as Pappy.
Yeah, Weller is available out here. In fact, it's the 18 that I like so much.
Yeah. Well, I can't get it. Can't
I'm sure somebody can walk down to a local. I mean, if they have it here and I can find it, because it usually sells out pretty quick.
Yeah, so
very good product. I agree.
If you can find it, that'd be great. Let's see what else I have here. All right, let's do a quick market update. So Apple hit all-time highs this week.
Yeah.
Combination.
Glad I didn't short it.
Yeah, that would have been ugly. Combination of, they had a so-so quarter. It wasn't really the best quarter I've ever seen. I mean, we talked about this last week, but when they announced the $100 billion buyback, plus some comments from Warren Buffett when he bought 75 million shares in the first quarter.
I would think that had something to do with the run-up.
Yeah. The Apple love affair is back, rekindled. So that was enough to reverse some of the concerns on Friday when we saw a 3.9% unemployment rate come out. Which was good. Sub 4 hasn't been around for many, many years.
Yeah, well, it's all bull crap anyway. I'm going to go look at shadow stats as we speak.
As you do that, I'll mention also that new hires were at 164,000, a little bit lower than expected, and we're starting to trail down a little bit on the new hires. But, you know, still, there's a lot of job openings available. And as a matter of fact, I think the number came out, the JOLTS number came out today, that like we're at a record level of job openings, jobs available. So maybe people can get jobs if they want them.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, if they want them, they could sit on the couch. not doing anything.
Well, I mean, a lot of these jobs are just minimum wage jobs. There's more minimum wage jobs out there than anything nowadays. And by the way, according to shadow stats, we're still over 20%. It is coming down, though.
20%. Right, because if you take out the labor participation rate and all that. But, I mean, things are better. I don't think anybody would say that there's a real... I mean, there are pockets of areas that there are concerns with employment, of course. And you get the kind of, you know, the Texas situation when oil prices go down or if real estate goes down in a particular state or, you know, maybe other areas.
No, I'm not complaining. I'm just telling you, I mean, this. I think these people, they're out of the participation element. They're all bums. I'd hate to use the word homeless, a lot of them. The trains, there are more trains going by than ever before, loaded with goods and products and back and forth and back and forth. And things are lively and the roads are crowded and the potholes are still there. They haven't done anything about that. And we're not in a depression. But if you're homeless and you're shooting up at the BART station, I don't think your prospects are very good.
Why do you say something like that? Why not? That could be a skill.
What, shooting up at the BART station?
I don't know.
Avoiding the police? I don't know.
But let me ask you this. Each time we talk about employment, you bring up the shadow stats. And we talk about how the jobs number, according to the old methodology, is, you know, 18 or 20%, right? That's the going discussion.
Yeah.
When, if ever, do we switch the conversation to what the new levels are and look at those as the, you know, we kind of a little in the way we sound like, oh, I remember the day when pretzels were a nickel and I can go to there and get a, I can get it from the soda jerk and I can get a soda for 2 cents.
Well, I mean, I think there's an element of importance when you say that when I was in some early years, my parents bought a Ford Mustang for $2,700 and it was top of the line. And top of the line Ford Mustangs now is $37,000. I think there's some element there that needs to be addressed. You can't say, well, we have no inflation. The inflation is zero. The shadow stat guy says it's close to 10%. I mean, prices keep going up. The price of gasoline right now is a lot higher than you'd think it would be. I remember when they were moaning about, oh, my God, it's going to go to $2. And now around here, it's $4.
Do you remember when it went to $2? There was a whole panic about, there was this whole issue because none of the signs back in the day when they would change the numbers had twos.
They had no twos.
There was a shortage of twos.
Yeah.
Before they changed to digital.
Yeah. Well, I hope they have the whole set now, the nines.
And the threes, they're going to have to break out the threes shortly. How much is gas by you?
Regular gas by here around here is about $3.60.
Wow. Yeah, still about $2.75 here.
Yeah, when I was in Mississippi recently, I noticed it was about $2.40. And I'm thinking, why is it so high in California? Well, they have all these extra taxes. They gouge the public. The politicians just gouge the public because we're an oil-producing state. We're a refining state. We shouldn't be paying top dollar.
Well, somebody's got to pay for all those wonderful services you have out there.
Like what? What services?
Well, all those state-paid psychiatrists to begin with. you need them out there.
Yeah.
But no, seriously, when are we going to switch over? Not to beat this horse here, but when are we going to switch over to the discussion that says, okay, well, we're at 3.9. What was yesterday's numbers are yesterday's numbers. These are the new set of numbers. This is the new baseline. And that's what we'll talk about.
I'm never going to switch over because I think it's a scam. I don't believe for a minute there's 3.9% unemployment. That's telling me that 3.9% of the population that might want to work is the only group that can't get a job or they don't want to work, get a job or whatever the reason is. When it's obvious, if you can look around and you see there's more people than that out of work.
Right. But
I mean, you can, if you want to just pretend, yeah, I guess it's great. Yeah, we got 3.9% unemployment. It's fantastic. I can do that if you want me to.
No, you don't have to do that. I'm just wondering. Just wondering. Yeah. We do have, you talked about inflation a moment ago, that there is inflation, that you are seeing some signs of inflation and all sorts of things in cars. And we have this week the inflation data coming out. Finally, it switched back. For whatever reason, there was a time where the CPI came out first. It was like 2 months that the CPI came out first and then the PPI came out afterwards. I don't know what that was about. But We have PPI coming out tomorrow, and I believe CPI the next day. So we're going to see if there's actually inflation. And what we have been seeing, as I've talked about time and time again, is this whole idea that we're seeing input prices rise, you know, as we see materials prices move higher. So we're seeing input prices move up. We're seeing export prices move down, import prices move up. So the input and import prices both moving up. So that's technically a recipe for a margin squeeze on manufacturers and companies that use products that are outside the U.S. That's probably why a lot of the domestic small caps have been doing better lately and holding up much better than we've been seeing some of the large caps.
That makes sense.
Yep. But I'll also tell you that something I've been noticing in the markets more and more, it's like it's becoming clearer and clearer that markets have become are being held hostage to the algos. You know, we have this, markets are up really strongly in the pre-markets, let's say overnight, and then they start coming down, and then a news item hits and it comes down and it gets back to zero line or below, and then, you know, bounces up a little bit. Or we're down really hard on some news and it just bounces back up. It's this up and down, you know, turning the screws. I think what happens is here that we're seeing that a lot of algos are probing stops, finding where those stop levels are and popping them, because a lot of people look at technicals and they'll say, okay, that line right there, that's we, you know, had seven different tops that wouldn't get above. So you think that's support. Well, I'll buy into it if it drops. Right,
so these guys, you're telling me that these guys are tweaking these algos constantly. So in other words, there's no one good algo.
No, I'm saying that the algos probably have enough. They're probably.
Wait. You're telling me then that the algos are smart algos.
That's correct. Absolutely. Absolutely. What do you think they are? Just algos that are just simply static? The whole point. No, the whole point is to find. Well, they may be static, but the information going into them, the algorithm may be static. However, the information that's being input into them is not static, it's dynamic. So therefore what happens is it will change and move on the fly. So if the level today of the markets is 10 points higher, let's just say, and the support and resistance lines have been identified in a certain period, maybe they go back a day, 20
what
minutes.
What you're saying, I'm not going to argue that you're right. But what you're also saying is in subtext, is that means the algos can be played.
Yes. I believe so. There's probably algos that are working the algos.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. It's the ultimate, it's the Terminator. It's the Terminator in algos. That's why when you see sometimes the move down, there are algos that may be, let's call it, price sensitive, stop sniffing algos that are looking for those levels that'll break down, break them down really hard, allow it to flush down and then buy it on the bottom. Then there's algos that probably say, let's find the support levels and buy it. Then there's momentum that may actually push it even further. So if you had algo or looking at the markets, looking at support levels, they crash it through it. The momentum algos kick in, they start moving down. And then the support levels kick in order to buy those back and move them the other side. And then what those do is then they, you know, anybody that got in on the short side is getting blown out of the top. I mean, it's very clear. The masses are not moving in and out of the exact same levels throughout the day like this as fast as they are moving.
Kind of defeats the purpose of the stock market, it seems to me.
I mean, if you look at it from a distance, and you take it in its totality, then it's okay. When you look at it throughout the day is where the problems come in. You know that if there is a way to rig something, somebody's going to try to do it.
Oh, yeah.
And in a market, why not do it if you can do it? I'm not saying I like it.
It's where all the money is.
Yeah. Then you have the high-frequency traders, too, that are just making a little snip on each, you know, couple of pennies this way and that way, putting in fake orders. Yeah, it's a whole racket. Earnings now have been coming in and clearly coming in at the high end of expectations. and even more than that. So earnings, you know, we've seen earnings that, you know, expectations that a lot of the analysts have been driving up their estimates into earnings season. So let's say that they were at $1.50 and now they moved it up to $1.60. Companies are coming in like $1.74. So really impressive. There's a background commentary that's going on right now. And the question is being asked if we're at peak earnings.
Yeah.
You know, or if there's more to come, because we've seen a significant increase in year-over-year earnings, which then makes it pacifies the bulls, believing that the level of the markets or stocks are justified. So the question is going to be, are we in a period where we have peak earnings? And if so, what does that mean? And maybe that's why we're seeing that markets are not really moving up anymore. They're kind of just consolidating, just sitting there.
Yeah, it's definitely a kind of crawling along. It's crawling along the top.
Yeah, just crawling. It's still down about 6 or 7% from the top. The Dow, the S&P, the NASDAQ. NASDAQ's probably down 4%. The S&P is down about, I think, 6% from the top. And then it goes up a little bit, comes back a little bit, you know, goes up for 3 days. It looks like, good news. Good news is it's finally on its way. Finally, we're getting out of this malaise. And then even some of the good news, you know, you see companies coming out with really good earnings and they pop and then they start rolling down. So I think it has something to do with all of the, well, aside from the headlines, the risk, the concern, And maybe that's why we're seeing a little bit of a reduction in the hiring, a slight amount.
Maybe.
And we mentioned before the show started that the U.S. dollar has been moving up. I put a chart here. You can find these on DH Unplugged. And actually, when I did this chart earlier, it was at 92.71. That was the basket price of the U.S. dollar. And right now, 93.21.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. It's back, kind of back where it was around September of last year.
Yeah, and here's the problem, as I see it. If we have, you know, for every time a bullish or bearish argument comes out, when that argument concept fails, we just shrug it off. You know, everybody, don't worry about it. So, you know, where low gas prices was good for the consumer. Higher gas prices doesn't affect the consumer so much. Where the dollar moving down was a really good tailwind for companies, a dollar moving higher shouldn't affect earnings that much. You know, that's the game.
Yes, I think you nailed it. That is the game.
So right now we're in a significant, I mean, that the move since mid-April has been rather pronounced. And I think that this is going to have an impact. It's already having an impact on other countries, like, for example, the emerging markets. And also think about as the price of commodities are priced in dollars, in oil in particular. Oil is moving up, the dollar is moving up. Which means, let me say this differently, other currencies are moving down and the dollar is moving up, right? So as
that
the
would,
dollar...
Yes, that would.
So oil moving up, and the other currencies moving down means that the price of oil in other currencies is even that much higher.
Apparently.
So while we got a 3% move or so on the dollar and maybe oil's up 10%, net 7%, you know, for that, if you look at it the other way, it could be a 12% move on the price of oil for some countries. And crude did break $70 this week.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. It's 737. 7037.
Yep. And this is because of the update that we got today. Well, two things. I think it's playing right into the hand. I'm not gonna go away with this theory until I see it otherwise, but playing right into the Saudi's hand to goose the price of oil ahead of the Aramco IPO. They already came out, I think, last week saying that they want $80 oil. Of course they do. They want $300 oil.
Sure they do.
Why not? I mean, if I was selling oil, I'd want it to be as high as possible. If I was producing oil, I want it to be as high as possible. So you all right there?
Sorry.
You dropping things? You
got your- no, I just moving something and it's hitting some, I've got some ceramics here.
Ah.
You can hear that?
Yeah. Mm. Do you make your own ceramics? Or have you done that? Paint your own ceramics in like a class?
Oh, yeah. Everybody in the family does that.
Oh, they do not?
Yeah. I'm not even kidding.
You go to there, you do the painting, you put it in the kiln, and then you bring it home?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. What do you make? What kind of things?
Well, I don't do much. I mean, I make stuff that's just splatter paint. But the kids, my daughter in particular, make all kinds of elaborate things. And she actually can rent out the studio space, and she actually throws a pot and then has the kiln to herself.
Wow. Do you guys, have you done macrame in the past too?
No, that is not, no macrame, that's out. It's not on the list. It's a good one though. Nice try.
Yeah, sorry. All right, let's see what else we got here. Oh yeah, so the reason why oil is moving up, it did move down about 2.5% at one point today. And there was confusion about what President Trump was going to announce with regard to Iran. What was really fascinating to me was, once again, we have an announcement that's slated to be for 2 p.m. Eastern time about the decision on whether to stay or leave the Iran nuclear deal, the Iran deal, right? 2 o'clock. 11 o'clock, we're starting to get little murmurs already. New York Times comes out with something and says that he's definitely pulling out, and several other news media outlets pulling out. CNN said, no, the information they have is that he's staying in.
Huh.
Now, what was interesting about that is before the 2 o'clock time, it was confirmed by several sources that this is happening and he's pulling out. I wonder if someone who was leaking the information said, let's show them how bad CNN is and tell them the opposite of what's really happening.
That's always a possibility.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, if you're playing, if these guys are everyone's playing games, you might as well play the game too.
Yeah. So President Trump decided to pull out of the Iran nuclear deal and impose the highest level of economic sanctions against Iran. And for some reason, markets plowed higher after the announcement. And you would have thought that this would cause a lot of disruption in markets, because now we don't know, are they going to move ahead with their nuclear?
Well, it should have jacked up the price of oil.
It didn't immediately. It just sat there and kind of fell. And then tonight, after the API data came in, is when oil started really moving. Mm. So it did move up a little bit. Now, the expectation is that about 500,000 barrels of oil will be off the market due to, well, at least approximately due to Iran's production now, because, you know, there's sanctions against them. And we kind of reversed the whole deal. You remember?
Well, they can still sell to China.
Yeah, they will. They'll sell to China, Russia.
Yeah. So I don't see how they're going to be really losing out too much.
Because if you remember, before President Obama put this deal into play, Iran's oil was, we weren't taking any of it.
Yeah, but somebody was.
Yeah, no, China was, of course.
They're not taking it at much of a discount, I wouldn't think.
Nah, I don't know. But now you have problems with possibly other companies too. Like, I guess U.S. companies are not going to be able to do business with Iran. Again, we didn't see the real bottom line sanctions.
Yeah.
But Boeing could have a problem. They have like a,
Boeing wouldn't be too happy.
Yeah, they have like a 17 or some ridiculous, 17 billion, I think it is. Some ridiculous amount. Can't be 17 billion. Maybe 7 million. They have a very large order pending with Iran. And already there's been some comment that our allies are prohibited from doing business with them as well, the companies. And we may impose sanctions on those companies that are doing business with
countries.
Them.
Countries, yeah.
Yeah, so...
We'll see. I mean, this is a lot of people just think it's a negotiating tactic and it'll shake out within. Because look what he did with the steel thing. He made all these assertions. Oh, steel, we're going to stop it. And then they said, well, we're going to make an exception here. We're going to make an exception there. I don't even know who's not part of the exceptions.
I know. Well, that's the problem, to keep it all up in the air, isn't it? Like keep everybody mystified. And then...
No. It's a technique.
Yeah, So from the files of It's Getting Weird Out There. Did you see this news item tonight that the that AT&T has said it paid President Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen, for insights on the Trump administration?
I'm sorry.
Yes.
AT&T?
AT&T paid Donald Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen.
Who he never sees.
Okay, so.
Well, I mean, what does his personal attorney know?
I don't know, but he is his personal attorney. And could you imagine if you had a personal attorney and someone else paid them to find out information about you? And doesn't that, well, I don't even understand how that, they paid him $200,000.
Well, that's peculiar.
Yep.
Huh. I don't know what to make of that.
And this guy, Michael, what's Stormy Daniels' attorney's name? Avenetti?
Yeah, that guy.
That guy is, he's getting more coverage than anybody I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, he's probably got some PR machine working for him.
It's unbelievable. So, yeah, the disclosure came after the lawyer said that AT&T had paid Cohen. I don't know how he found that out. And they did disclose that. So they were trying to find out information. Obviously, through the end of 2017, I think one of the payments was also in 2018, probably because of their merger.
Yeah, obviously.
I don't know what violates what ethics.
Well, it should be shaken out in the news because all these guys, and especially CNN, they, if you watch any show there, they got the guy reading the news and then they got like 20 people surrounding him around his huge desk and they all have to get their 2 cents worth in.
Yeah. And they're just, I mean, they can't get to any other news, CNN, besides everything that surrounds Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Because there is so much news, I it seems. Maybe not, but it's...
Well, there's a lot of stuff going on everywhere, but they just focus on Trump because it's just part of the hate culture.
But this thing, this troubles me that AT&T, first of all, it also can be another way of trying to smear Michael Cohen as a person of ill repute of some sort. Maybe. To try to separate, you know, Trump from the whole thing with the Stormy Daniels 130,000. And I don't want to get into politics, but what the hell is wrong with Rudy Giuliani?
You know, I don't know that any of this isn't all pre-planned.
Oh, you've got to be either a genius or a lunatic to plan like this. I mean,
I think it's a possibility. I mean, this guy's got nothing else to do but connive.
Yeah, connive is what's happening. Yeah, it's getting weird. It's getting weird.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I don't know if you listened to this. I sent you a file on this last week. The Tesla conference call?
No, I missed it. Somehow I missed it. Sorry.
This was, so I wanted to listen to this and I wanted to hear what was going on. And you start the conference call and it starts with the old, you know, everybody's on listener only mode. If you want to ask a question, you know, the whole operator stuff, right?
Right.
And usually what happens right after there, and we're going to introduce the CFO, let's say, to, you know, prepare remarks about the numbers, and they come on, they talk about, well, you know, we had a good quarter, this and that, and we made this and the margins and this and our, okay. Elon Musk came on and I've listened to him before. I don't recall him babbling as much, just rambling, you know, with that whole, I think there's the right word, an erudite attitude of, you know, the California, yeah, well, that's fun. You know, that's a tough one. Let me think through it. You know what I'm talking about, that kind of thing?
Yeah, hemming and hawing. And
not saying anything.
Stumbling and mumbling and not saying anything. Right. Yeah, so, it's very common.
And from a very high level, you know, and then coming out with, you know, some kind of weird, there's a dispersion in the in that kind of question, and there has to be, you know, several different layers of the way that you can look at this. You know, and like, just tell me the freaking answer, man. You know, so he's there was these awkward pauses. I actually pulled clips and I put it on the Disciplined Investor podcast, so you could listen to it there, and a few different clips, but. Questions. So he comes on, he starts just talking about this and really, really pressing on how they don't need money. They're not going to have a cash infusion by going to the market, that they're going to be profitable. He said, we're definitely going to be profitable. I think in tweets, third quarter. next quarter. And he said, Yeah, they said they're going to turn a profit. I mean, from losing a few dollars a share to
what?
Yeah.
How?
I don't know. I guess they're going to rejigger some of the numbers. And in the conference call, he said maybe. So that was kind of interesting. Okay, I'll go with that. You know, United question. Okay, fine. And then some questions came in about the financials, about deposits and a variety of different financial things. So let me just go back one second. He did say, hey, all the information about the financials, we sent you in a letter. It's on the site in the 10-K. Read that. You don't need me to tell you about that. Okay? So now questions start coming in. Two analysts, several analysts in are asking these questions. They're answering it. The CFO is answering questions. And he's getting kind of tired of this. And finally, he says, you know, stop. So somebody's asking a question about some financials of some sort. He says, you know what? We're not taking any boneheaded and boring questions. Next, hangs up on the guy. The next guy comes on and starts asking about the reservations and how much money is on deposit with reservations and how many people with reservations will actually maybe buy versus this. And he said, yeah, boring question. Hangs up on him. So he says these questions are killing me. I can't take these questions. He said, we're going to YouTube. So he gets this 25-year-old YouTuber that has some kind of a financial channel-ish thing that he's doing that had maybe 13 or 14,000 subscribers. And he would talk about all sorts of stocks and all that. 23 minutes of questions he accepted from this kid.
Well, that's peculiar.
Yeah, no kidding. I was listening. I was flabbergasted.
So were the questions boneheaded or just typical analyst questions that were meaningful?
No, these were things like, you know, tell us about your flamethrower business. Tell us about how great your cars are.
No,
tell
was that the kid?
The other guys were not boneheaded. They were asking questions because they're trying to model their financials to give, you know, to understand better about the profitability and where Tesla is and to provide a solid and meaningful analysis to their people that own the stocks.
Yeah, and then the kid was just asking about the flamethrower?
I don't know, the kid was asking all sorts of questions about, you know, the cars and when they're going to reach this particular level and this factory production, almost feeding into possibly scripted questions that Elon would like to answer.
Possibly scripted.
I just thought of that just now, actually. That's possibly scripted.
Well, that's no agenda thinking.
Yep. So, but 23 minutes of this.
Yeah, it was scripted.
Yeah. So question after question after question. Now, again, during the call, he said several times, not only he was very vehemently emphatic. He was emphatic about no cash infusions would be necessary, not going to the market for funding. Now, fast forward to Monday. Press release showing that they may, in fact, need more money. Then he tweets on top of that, that a big short squeeze is coming. The mother of all squeezes. Stock rises nicely. One day later.
That was coy. I like that. Yeah.
Then one day
the
later.
Mother of all squeezes.
Yep. He says he goes out and he buys a report is filed that he buys 30,000 shares. Worth about.
Musk?
Yep.
Okay.
So I'm just saying. Kind of the whole thing was a little, I found it strange. Off-putting.
It sounds very sketchy.
Yeah. Let's see. Going around here. Nestle's. You know, Nestle. They've been around for a while. Yeah. The Swiss food giant. Spending $7.15 billion for the right to market Starbucks coffee, their beans and their capsules and all that. So they're not getting any product for this. They're just spending $7.5 billion to market.
Yeah, for the name.
Yeah.
It's like a licensing deal.
Right, exactly.
So whatever they're selling at the grocery store and the capsules and the beans and all the rest is something, who knows what coffee. It's not Starbucks.
No. It's an espresso and Dolce Gusto Nestle brands. So they're gonna be able
to, like, you know, the classic American example. I'm surprised the Nestle's did it that way, but Americans always say, "Well, we don't." When Löwenbräu was purchased, I think by Miller.
Löwenbräu. I haven't heard that
years ago. Oh, this is back in the '70s.
Let it be Löwenbräu.
Yeah, I remember that. And it was a big deal. It was a major imported beer in either, I think it was Miller or Budweiser that bought them. And they're going to start marketing it. And this is a story that's a trade story that floated around. The Löwenbräu people all came over saying, well, now that you've bought the American version of the company, they get the American rights. And they said, we can show you how to make the beer. And one of the representatives from, I think, again, it was Miller, said, oh, don't worry about it. We know how to make beer.
Ah.
And, of course, they just made Miller.
Is Löwenbräu even on the market anymore?
No, of course not. Yeah. It's the same. I think it was Michelob. I think it must have been Budweiser. It was. They were competing with their own. One of their own. Michelob was another one. It's all the same beer, until the Belgians bought the company. All their beers tasted the same to me, and so Löwenbräu just became another version of Budweiser, or Miller, or Michelob, and it didn't have any distinction at all. Mm. So the people stopped buying it.
You know, I had probably the worst beer of my life last weekend. Heineken
How's that
Light.
Possible?
Heineken Light. Do not attempt.
Oh, Heineken
do
Light.
Do not attempt this beer. I don't care what kind
Heineken's
of diet you're on.
Heineken's already light.
It's horrendous. Just horrendous. Snapchat. Bit of a shakeup after a miserable quarter. The stock hit an all-time low last week after their numbers came out. Chief Financial Officer Drew Vollero is going to be leaving his post at the Snapchat parent and being replaced by Tim Stone, who's the VP of Finance at Amazon. That guy obviously says, I have enough money. I don't care about the next job. Let's see if I can make it work. I mean, why would he leave?
Well, maybe, I think possibly he wants to move into this area. I think Snapchat's in Palo Alto or Menlo Park, something like that, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And Amazon's up in Seattle, and the weather's miserable up there.
Yep. But, you could buy the weather for the amount of money he probably made. Set up like a greenhouse for yourself or something, or some kind of, anyway.
I don't know.
Now, from around the world, we need like a,
I wouldn't
like
know
a
why
jingly. Around the world, Japan household spending fell 0.7% in March from a year earlier to mark the... You opening up a piece of mail?
I'm not going to be able to do anything with this mic. This mic picks up everything.
I also hear, what do you have for dinner? Because I hear your stomach rumbling.
No.
What mic is this?
Continue. This is a tube mic that I've been playing with.
It sounds good.
It's a copy of a very famous Telefunken mic.
And
handmade.
What's the brand?
Well, it's a handmade mic by a mic nut. And it's a copy... using newer components of a Telefunken mic, the ELAM-250, I believe is the name of it. Very famous microphone.
And what were you using before?
Well, last show I used a Heil PR-40.
Yeah, that's just a great mic for money.
I've mostly been using a CAD 3000, which is a functionally nice sounding mic. Right. But this one here's got more going on.
Is it a side talker?
Yeah, well, most mics are side talkers.
Not the Heil.
No, but no, it's a dynamic. There's about five of the down the throat talkers that are used by usually broadcasters, and they're all dynamic mics. Generally speaking, I don't know of any mics like that are condenser.
Yeah, most of the condensers are side talkers.
All of them. I don't know. Maybe there's one or two that aren't, or there's some stick mics, perhaps.
Right.
There's a couple. There's a couple with a small diaphragm condenser mics that are you can talk down the thing.
Yeah, I like talking down to my mic. But this is the best mic. This is your recommendation. The best mic I think I've ever had. This Heil.
It's the podcaster's mic.
Yeah, this is good. Anyway, Japan household spending fell 0.7% in March from a year earlier, which marked the second straight month of declines and a little bit of a lull in there. And of course, they're blaming it on bad weather.
Ah,
bad weather in the first quarter.
There we go.
Temporarily lull because of the bad weather. Wage earners, income slid 3.8% in March, which is the third straight month of falls. And in a sign, firms remain wary of raising pay despite record profits. So the whole theory that companies are going to do really well from either taxes or earnings or whatever it is, and these companies are going to raise the rate and just spray the money out to everybody. Not happening. Get it through your heads, people. It ain't happening unless they're going to be forced to do some so somehow. Australia is having a big problem, by the way. Their whole financial industry is like really mucked up. And I say that with an incorrect consonant in front of that word. It seems there's a couple of scandals that went on in some of the banking industry and the financial planners, a company called ANZ has been paying bonuses to financial planners for selling its products. And stuff has gotten out of hand there to a point, misconduct and all sorts of bad acting going on in the financial sector. So there's a big crackdown on what's going on there. Talking about Me Too, 3, 4, 5, and 6, at least 4 more companies. I think you have, don't you have a segment, a Me Too segment?
Yeah, we got to jingle the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. So just a little point here. At least 4 more company officials are leaving after an investigation into complaints of harassment and bias for Nike. Six others left.
What are they doing at Nike? They just make...
I don't understand.
I don't understand it either.
I mean, I don't know. I don't understand the whole thing. I'd like to understand to what level something gets to harassment. So if somebody comes in the office and it's a woman or a man and you say, oh, I like Nike, I like your shoes. Is that possibly some kind of sexual harassment?
I don't know. It could be. Apparently it might be.
Those Nike, tennis shoes look really good on you. I mean, maybe. Anyway, New York State, and then we have something in New York. New York State's top law enforcement official, Eric Schneiderman, he tendered his resignation hours after New Yorker magazine published allegations of physical abuse by 4 women. Did you? And he was also known as a women's rights advocate, by the way.
Oh yeah, he was a Me Too guy.
Yeah. What is the deal with his response? First of all, I'm so sick of everybody responding on Twitter, but that's another story. He said, oh, in my private life, in consensual manner, I have done a lot of role playing, which that's code for, whips and bondage.
That might be, yeah.
So I guess but he said he never did something that wasn't consensual. And I don't know, just people are getting, maybe it's been going on all along and nobody gave a crap. And now they're just figuring they can, everybody needs to watch themselves. That's the bottom line on that.
Yeah.
And to ensure that we don't have any kind of bias on the show, making sure that we don't have any harassment, we of course hire the top legal aides. And to do so, it costs money. And the only way that we can do that is from your generous donations. So if you want to keep us out of the slammer, keep the show going.
Yeah, click on that donate button.
Yep, that donate button. That'll go right into the fund in the event there is any kind of legal action against us. By the way, you look beautiful tonight, John.
Hey. keep your hands to yourself.
Yeah. So please do so. I mean, if you haven't done so already, if you're listening to the show, any amount is really appreciated. Of course, we appreciate more the more you give. But nonetheless, if you would do so, and of course, this is show number 407, which means that you can get a one-of-a-kind, signed by myself and signed by John, an actual shirt that's a DH Unplugged t-shirt, and $407. Just go over to the donate button. Each show goes up to the price of the show, $407. We'll send you a one-of-a-kind signed with the show number on if you want from myself and John. I got to plug something in here. I don't know what's happening with my. Yeah. How did the new pen go?
I'm ready to use it.
All right.
I haven't done it. I'm gonna get these done this week.
Okay. All right. We have some Fed limericks that came in.
Ah, good.
So this is if you want to send them in, just send them to dhemail@gmail.com or go over to the Disciplined Investor. There's an Ask Andrew thing. Just click that and you can submit your Fed limerick. And of course, John is going to very closely grade these. And we ask the people in the chat room to, do some grading of yourself and we'll see how they match up. Of course, each and every week, by the way, there is the ability to listen live, and you can listen to the show at 9 o'clock Tuesday evenings, or you can find it on your favorite podcast repository. All right, the first one's another one from Simon Davies, and his goes like this. The folks at the Fed need to buck up. Their pride they need to suck up. Changing their tunes while flying balloons will know in the end that they will focus on future trends.
Well, that's actually more of a joke structure than the true limerick structure, which is what we're looking for. And I consider it something of a fail.
Oh, really?
Because it wasn't that fun. Well, maybe I'm wrong. Did you think it was hilarious?
Well, if he would have put the ending in that rhymed, I would have think it was okay. But the problem
is, by the way, most limericks, most limericks are dirty.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you?
So if you were to have the correct verbiage at the end, what would it be a difference for you?
Well, it would be more like a traditional limerick.
Yeah.
This is structured like a joke. So I'm going to give it a C.
Okay. So
just because I know he tried.
Oh, that's so nice of you. You're not usually that kind. All right. This one comes from Chris Beggio. The Fed we entrust with our banking, but the system is ripe for a hacking. With Tim Berners-Lee, we can all agree the web was not meant for everything. Be kind.
He started on with a roll. I thought the first one, two, three, four lines were all great. And then he couldn't quite come up with the right ending for it. And it just fell off the cliff. and also, it also suggests that Tim Berners-Lee is a stutterer.
Oh, yeah. Is he?
No, not that I know of. I met him once. I'm going to give this a C.
Okay. C for effort, which is okay.
C for effort. Another nice, you try to do something.
All right. This one's from yours truly. The Fed has the power at hand to move markets as centrally planned. With a comment or note, their aim is to float. The recessions are now totally banned.
I think that this is a good one. Another, you've been actually on a roll recently, so I'm going to give you an A for this.
Ooh, Andrew gets the A. I'll take it. Yep. We got to make a limerick book somewhere. All right, moving along.
Getting enough that we could probably put it in a small ebook.
Yeah. Let's see here. All right, I'm announcing. Oh, announcement. We have a new closest to the pin, Baidu.
Ah, right.
Baidu is now open for entries over on dhunplugged.com. Go over to the top. You'll see where it says close to the pin. All you have to do is put in your price guess, and it will tell you when it's closing. I think on the 25th is the final date, but you have to get it in before the 18th. So get it in there, and then you have another shot at winning a shirt here. Not signed. You only get the signed one with the $407, which is the price of admission for this show. All right, moving along. I think we need to make a road trip.
Okay, where to?
Well, it looks like Birmingham.
What's going on there?
Well, the Highlands Bar and Grill in Birmingham was named America's Most Outstanding Restaurant at the James Beard Foundation Awards in Chicago.
Highlands, Birmingham, Alabama?
It seems that way.
What's the name of this place?
The Highlands Bar and Grill. I mean, not a very, very creative name.
Sounds like a place you'd find in Scotland.
Yeah. Highlands pastry chef Dollister Miles was also named best in the country, making the restaurant the one runaway winner at the awards. So you got the pastry chef gets the top number, the thing gets the best, unbelievable. So panel of chefs, restaurateurs, and food journalists gave chef and owner Frank Stitt's Modern Southern Restaurant the honors. Modern Southern.
Yeah, there's a lot of action going on in the South with these restaurants. A lot of it stems from Austin. And And then there's a bunch of other people that were Southerners, and they went to New York and gave up because it was miserable. They didn't like it, and they came down with the more genteel. The problem that they have, there's a good PBS show called The Farmer and the Chef. And it's about a woman who was, and her husband, who were out of New York. And, but they were from North Carolina. And they moved back to take care of their parents, or I'm not sure why. They moved back.
This is freaking Green Acres. This is a Green Acres, what you're talking about. This is not a real thing.
The element of Green Acres is the following, which is that they are starving to death as a high-end gourmet restaurant because nobody can pay these prices for the food.
Yeah.
They're just not used to New York prices for food in the middle of nowhere, podunk North Carolina.
Yeah, the problem, I mean.
Yeah, Green Acres, probably.
Green Acres is the place to be.
So I think that this place in Alabama would have suffer from the same problem. Mm.
I see.
Lack of a cosmopolitan atmosphere, a cosmopolitan audience.
Now that they got this great.
Not that that's a bad thing, right. I'm just saying.
Well, they got this great honor, so we'll have to put it on the list somewhere.
Well, you got to get there soon.
And to do so, we probably have to pay by credit card, and that leads us right into the next commentary and story. Two of the biggest U.S. banks, Goldman Sachs and Wells Fargo, are on the brink of piling into the credit card lending business, looking for a share of that $180 billion in fees annually. Hmm. A couple of questions I have on this. Isn't Wells Fargo under some kind of strict orders that they can't grow their portfolio due to all the shenanigans they pulled?
Yeah, that's a good point.
How are they doing this?
You're right.
I don't understand how
they do it. I don't know. Yeah. You'd have to get permission from a judge.
I guess. Goldman Sachs is weighing the move as part of a push into consumer finance with his Marcus online lender. And he said during a conference, Wells Fargo plans to resume targeting. That's kind of funny, actually, right? Targeting U.S. non-consumers. U.S. non-customers with mail credit card offers later this year and began accepting new applicants from outside affiliates in 2016. And why are they doing this? Look at that chart there, the credit card debt chart. We're above pre-crisis levels on total outstanding credit card debt. Almost a little over $1 trillion of outstanding credit card debt at the low interest rate of 20%.
Combine that with student loans and the whole country's bankrupt.
No kidding.
Well, it was up there, of course, just before the 2008-2009 fiasco. It looks like it peaked around 2008.
Yep.
And then it dropped like a rock, and then it's been creeping back up, and now it's higher than it was in 2008.
Yeah.
Approaching $1.1 trillion.
And like I said, you know, we're talking about credit cards don't have low fees. So on this, the interest payment on this is just outrageous. People paying 20% a year. It's a business I'd like to get into. Wouldn't you like to be in the 20%?
A 20% a year business? Yeah.
Even if after expenses,
it's only 15. Not going to get that from any stock we're going to be able to buy.
Right. Yep. And I don't know if we cover this as the last point here, but do we cover the super secret project from Amazon, the robots in the home?
No, I don't think we did. Maybe we did, but I don't remember it.
So Amazon is working on another big bet, the robots for the home. It's a super secret project.
So secret that we're talking
that
about.
That we know about it. Right. It's so ridiculous. The retail and cloud computing giant has embarked on an ambitious top secret plan to build a domestic robot, codename Vesta.
Yeah, was it going to pick up and do the dishes? I don't think so.
Right. I don't
is it going to do the bed? Nah, seems unlikely. It's not going to do anything. This is a publicity stunt, just like those stupid drones.
Oh, yeah, the drones. What a waste of time, those drones. I mean, there's something, listen, for camera operators to do some really cool sports camera work and all that, to fly a drone seems like the most, just to fly it, after the first time, it's boring. Up and down, in and out. I mean, it's just boring. I don't want anybody to do that. What are you writing for PC Magazine?
You got me forgetting this one.
You were so good for a while.
Here comes the time, and the clock is moving. I'll tell you what it is in a second. It's a gripe about... let me think. Gripe about, yeah. So here's what I determined. I was looking for something to write about, and I said, you know, and I noticed over the last few days I was using YouTube for tutorials, because I had this program. I didn't know how to use it. I feel like an idiot not being able to use it, but there's a kind of a open source product called Rufus out there that allows you to create bootable USB drives. And it's very simple to use. It works. It's just easy. But I still couldn't figure out how to get the code on there the right way. And I watched this video, and it turns out it's just drag and drop. It's not even complicated. Embarrassingly easy. But then I realized how many times I like to change your wiper blades on this weird car and all these things. You can find a YouTube video that will explain pretty much anything you want to, you know, do a new flooring in your house. It'll show you how to do. You want to lay tile? It'll show you how to do. You want to do something weird with Photoshop? It'll show you. So I wanted to write about that. Then I realized, talking to my wife about it, there's a serious problem with all these YouTube videos, and this is what I complained about, which is they're not. Most of them are wrong. They just have all these idiots that are just doing these things and thinking that they know what they're doing, and they're not. They're unable to do it. You have to plow through maybe 10 of these videos to find one where the guy knows what he's talking about.
But isn't this the whole problem with the ability to anybody to have a mouthpiece now to the world across everywhere?
Yeah, no, this is the problem with the internet in general. But I was advocating that Google, they make billions of dollars to put together a team of people the way Facebook's supposedly doing for its fake news project, put together a team of people and give some videos the good Google housekeeping approval stamp. You know, so this video is good. This one's not good. We just ignore the ones that aren't good. Leave them up. You know, who cares? But you give some stamps of approval. You have some mechanism that allows people to do a search on the good videos and not have to look at all the junk.
That's what the comments and ratings are for, I think.
The comments and rating, it's inconvenient. You got to read through the thing, and there's fake comments. This is the same thing with Yelp. Somebody doesn't like the restaurant or his ex-wife, and they're just writing these negative reviews, and you have to read through the reviews. No, I want a stamp.
Well, the problem with that is then you would go to one particular video. Everybody would go to one particular video versus hunting around and getting all those ads thrown at them in the beginning. It would cost Google money.
I know what you're thinking. I don't think it would. For one thing, you don't have just one video. There's probably 10 people that can do, you know, whatever you're looking for, do it well. And you could look at all those 10, and then there's 30 that are crap. And those 30 probably aren't monetized anyway.
The problem is, John,
small potatoes.
The problem is you're from a generation, as I am, when we actually were skeptical about information. These days, people are just take anything out there as gospel. First of all, you got things like Photoshop. You make up things. We talked about this last week with the painting that wasn't, or the photo that wasn't real.
Yeah.
But this generation doesn't care. It's like, oh, that's good. Must be real fine.
I think that's a myth. I think they do care. They just don't know that they care.
They don't know.
I don't think they're dumb. This whole generation is as dumb as you're making them out to be. They're just naive, stupid, hey, whatever.
Naive. I mean, I'm not saying dumb, naive.
Okay, naive.
Trained naivete.
And the argument I make there is that basmati rice, which it's not hard to make basmati rice, but most people are making it like Chinese rice, and they do it on YouTube. And I watched two or three of these videos that if you cook your basmati rice the way these guys tell you to do it, and they're your kids, you're going to get some of the worst tasting stuff you've ever had. That basmati rice is a dirty rice that needs to be washed a lot.
See, this is where I draw the line. You screw up basmati rice, that's it. They should shut the whole goddamn YouTube down. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I couldn't find one reasonably accurate methodology outlined on any of the. I talked to my wife again about this, and she says, you know, she's given up on all recipes on YouTube. There's just nothing. Nobody knows how to cook. Mm. So anyway, that's what the column's about. Enjoy it.
All right. Let's get over to the stocks. It's a game that we play. It's not an offer to buy or sell any security. What we do is recommend or talk about with each other what stocks we like or don't like or maybe not. And we come up with a thesis. You can track these over on DH Unplugged under the weekly stocks tab or button. And there's a live tracking system that tells you exactly what we're up or down on the recommendation that we talk about. Again, recommendation for each other. If for whatever reason you decide to utilize any of these ideas, make sure that you do your own research. You go to a professional financial advisor. We are not responsible or liable. And finally, any stock that John C. Dvorak, myself, or Horowitz Company clients own will be duly noted and disclosed in the disclosures. Why don't you take the list?
That was good.
Thank you.
Well, our older picks are all up there, but they've been bounced.
Yep.
Drexion shares, exchange traded fund, one of your
gold.
The gold. With a final total of 5% up, got bumped out. La Jolla Pharmaceutical, one of mine, with a in the green, but not much in the green, got bumped off. Facebook is still on the list, and that's my pick. That was the one where you picked the short, and I picked the long, and the long is now up 17%.
Yeah, I think the short I made 5% on when it closed. I think I have a list here somewhere. And then it turned around. Yeah, I made 5.49% on that. And then it turned around and just rallied.
Yeah, it looks good. And it's still on there, too. And then you had Intracom, another insider's pick, was up 3%. And that got kicked off. Mm-hmm. So theirs are all done. And so I have now I have a huge loss on Alliance MMA, which is a penny stock. I bought it at 50 cents because of insiders that the people own the company. And now it's at 39 cents. And so I'm down 22%, but it's not going to get bumped until it gets down to 30 cents.
Yeah, it went to 31. It did go to 31.
It did go to 31.
Yeah, it went to 31.
So it's on the move
yeah,
up.
That's a good point. Yep.
You have a short on Tesla for bad mojo, and it's pretty much dead money. Nothing's going on there. You also, this is my pick. I think this was the Drexion Exchange Traded Fund Trust. I had some reason.
That was the triple Russia.
Oh, the triple Russia, right. And so it's way up. And then I have the single Russia. Again, we don't know why I did this, but I did both.
Right.
But we did it. And it's up one third as much as the other one, which is the triple.
Yep.
So that worked out. And now the rest of the stuff is just kind of. It's not doing much of anything. Biotechni and Match Group. I do have one, Biogen. Most of these things are these biotech companies. I probably shouldn't be playing them too much.
Match Group had some earnings this evening, so it was up like 3% after hours, so that was good. I do not have any picks for this week, just to let you know. Not because of lack of effort, but just didn't find
it. If I was going to pick something because of more and more and more buying by the Baker brothers, it'd be Seattle Genetics.
Oh, really?
But since I've already got two biotechs on here, I will refuse to do this. I think part of our unwritten rule should be one sector, pick one, pick something, as opposed to just owning every steel company, for example.
Right.
So I'm going to beg off and not do the Seattle Genetics, even though if I was going to put my money in something myself right now, that's probably where I'd go.
Okay. Well, we will end this. I'm going to be in New York next week, so we're going to try our best to do the show live. We'll do it one way or the other, but we'll try to do it live. I think we'll be able to do it. I got the whole system all set up, but who knows when I get everything up there what happens. But it should work. Did some work with Adam. By the way, you can listen to Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak every Thursday and Sunday on the New Agenda Show. I didn't listen to the whole show this week, but was somebody kvetching about dogs in restaurants? Because that's another one of my things.
Yeah.
Oh,
Adam.
I can't take it.
Adam's hating on the dogs, but he hates dogs.
I'm not a big dog guy, but in the restaurants.
Yeah, you hate dogs too. I don't hate dogs.
Just not in the restaurants.
You hate dogs. And people, you don't have a dog. You
people
hate
messing
dogs.
With their hair when they're eating.
Well, at least they're not barefoot.
Right. Well, but dogs are barefoot and they shed.
I've seen dogs wearing booties.
That's fine. They're welcome. They're welcome. All right. I'll see you next week.
Okay, I'll talk to you then.
All right, bye.
Have a nice
You've
trip.
Been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.